It's the Lifetime Body Podcast, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime. Join physical therapist, author, and human performance expert John Zombro and inquisitive life-optimizing co-host PK the Incomparable as we explore the secrets of food, movement, sleep, ergonomics, and awareness in the pursuit of ultimate wellness. In each and every show, you'll learn how to look, feel, and perform your best so that you can live your longest, healthiest, and happiest life. Hi, folks. This is John Zombro, your host for the Lifetime Body Podcast, where science meets common sense and where we help you to make your body last a lifetime. And Merry Christmas today. We've got some light snow falling outside, and it's really a great day. Every day's a great day at TLB, but we certainly are so thankful for you listeners and part of our community, and we really appreciate it. And we is, of course, not only myself, but PK the Incomparable. How are you doing today, good buddy?
John Boy, I am doing great. I think that I can sense that you're segueing into like a little restorative, relaxing holiday spirit after the big push to get Animal Fit out last week.
Yeah, there's going to be some celebration and some family dining and those kinds of things. And I'll probably have a little digital detox, and there might even be some fasting going on, but not today and tomorrow, but beyond that. So good stuff.
Wonderful. Yeah, and you'll certainly take in some merriment, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I've got a double batch of bone broth finishing up right now.
Oh my, what a treat. We're not gonna make any latte references, just to suit our audience.
I live on the edge, what can I say? That's kind of what today's show is about. Today is episode number 26, and this show is a mailbag show. It really combines some comments and questions that we've received recently from our great audience. And I think it's really going to come together in some unique ways. So as usual, I'm thrilled to be sharing that. We've got several insightful points that our listeners have put upon us to try to develop. And one of the first things we're going to do is we're going to look at PK's inner animal, since last week we talked about myself a little bit. We're going to talk about the subject of body dimension variants within an animal type. We'll look at some famous athletes and celebrities and their probable inner animals. And finally, we'll address a reader request to compare CrossFit with marathon training. And of course, you can get your copy of Animal Fit, the ebook that helps you to unleash your inner beast and unlock your athletic potential, on the website at any time.
Absolutely.
So this first question that came in, love some of the names. I've got to get more creative myself. Big Barney 64 emailed this question, and he says this. He says, so Jay-Z is a wolf. What beast is PK?
Yes, absolutely. Well, we've kind of, as part of the process for, just as we were chatting about Animal Fit as it was coming, as it was bubbling to the surface and crystallizing in your mind enough to talk about it, we've chatted about this for a few months now. But I did go through, and I followed through formally after, reading through the text. And so I have all my answers here.
Yeah, and I think we should just start with that. The first thing that we look at is the skeletal diameter or frame size, as well as some of the shapes and features of the bones. And so what'd you find?
I found that I am a large, and actually going through it and kind of cataloging all the different results, I was just barely in terms of the bone structure, definitely a large.
Okay. And then you took a look at your joint and connective tissue mobility.
I did. I came out to be average.
Then we move along to your muscle fiber type, and everyone has three types of muscle fibers. We all have some fast twitch and slow twitch, and within the fast twitch there are two types. There's a 2A and a 2B. The 2A is the fast twitch oxidative glycolytic, and the 2B is the fast twitch glycolytic. And so which fiber type did you think, based on going through the test, you found to be primary in your body?
I think that I turned out to be a fast FT/OG, which you can certainly talk in more detail, but that's where I kind of shook out. So that'd make me a 2A, correct?
Yeah. So if you found that you're of the type 2A muscle fiber or fast twitch oxidative glycolytic fiber, that's a kind of a what we call a medium characteristic fiber. It's quick, but not quite as powerful as a purely glycolytic fiber, but it also has quite a bit more strength production capacity than a slow twitch fiber, although not quite as much endurance or fatigue resistance. So it's kind of an all around capacity muscle fiber.
Yes, I think that's where I ended up, just going through the self-determination. So it's good to hear you kind of talk through that. That reflects, I guess, some of my personal experiences, just kind of being an athlete or just a person in my body throughout my life.
Sure, and you are indeed an athlete, as is all of our listeners, and we really want to encourage that training of the inner athlete, but also bringing out the inner beast. And so, in doing so, you have a base animal or base somatotype. And what do you think is your base?
I think my base is a bear.
Okay. And then, based on those findings, what would you say is your secondary animal?
Secondary animal is a panther.
Okay. Well, this is an interesting one because both I, in working with you some, and yourself in doing an analysis, felt that equals Wolverine. Although in animal fit, a Wolverine would be a panther first, bear second. So a bear.
Oh, right. I mixed it up. Yeah. Sorry about that, John. Yes.
That's okay. You know, would be a badger. One way could be doing some creative interpretation. Of course, the other way is you're saying, well, oh, yeah, okay, I recognize that I'm just a little bit more of a panther with a bear, second. And so what probably threw you off in there is the skeletal diameter. You have a fairly large diameter skeleton, but you have a lot of other features that kind of pull you a little bit more panther. So you probably are one of these 53-47 percentage beasts, and definitely have to sort through that a bit. But here we are. We've got PK, the Wolverine.
John, that is embarrassing, listeners. I apologize. I tried to be thorough in my preparation. Normally, I'm asking John the questions. But actually, I think that it raises a good point, because as you and I were talking, it was clear that I was a mix of panther-bear or bear-panther, but actually going through and doing that, you're exactly right. When I did the tests for actually the skeletal diameter, I'm clearly, an endomorph bear camp large, but actually going through all the different determinations there, I just felt like I probably was, 53% panther, and the secondary animal, the bear, is really strong, and in some cases I think that, I might have just assumed that I started out as a bear, because I've always kind of been a more, sort of a bigger barrel-chested type of a dude. But going through, in particular, looking at the shapes and the features, and then looking at the joints, and it helped illuminate, because it's not, as it says in the text, just about body composition. It really is, you're looking at these objective qualities regardless of sort of what your body comp is.
Oh yeah, and I'd agree. As we kind of, as I know you, I don't think you have quite the degree of joint mobility or joint hypermobility that we see in most bears. You're certainly more in a panther category there, and the muscle fibers. Also on your bones, if I could say it this way, you're on the small side of large. In other words, when you do that test, it's very close in your case, whether you're medium or large. So you picked large, but actually most of your other findings pulled you ultimately into Wolverine. And so in celebrating, your inner beast, your inner animal, Is it possible for you to relate a few experiences in the past where you now recognize that you were cruising through life as a Wolverine?
Yeah, I think that the first point is, especially as you and I, before Animal Fit even became a book, when we were just having conversations about this, there is a great level of comfort or just a realization washed over me that really connected my past experiences with what you were describing, in particular differences among, people in my family or other friends that I worked out with or did exercises with or activities with. And I think that just a kind of greater understanding of certainly my gifts, but also, we call them weaknesses because they are sort of natural, non-judgmentally deficiencies by comparison, but without judgment, just about what I was good at and what really I kind of, wasn't good at, naturally inclined to. So, I think that the one experience that was probably, that really crystallized my mind was when I think about mountain biking, because I love to mountain bike. I've been doing it forever. And, I am, being a Wolverine on a bike, I kind of started to think about that. And so some of the things that I'm good at, like trickier technical climbs that might require a little burst of power, in a short span, those are some things that I'm good at and I really enjoy. In the past, when I've tried to keep up with my more like coyote eyes biking buddies who are dialed in to go all day on the high end of the aerobic zone, if I try and keep up, it really depletes me quickly. And then I both sort of lose my, ability to go, to anaerobic ability, but also it depletes me of power. And so what I kind of connected, and this is, we've talked about it, kind of the lumbering bear as they go through the bear's moving through the woods. That's kind of what I need to do when I'm mountain biking on say a long climb. So I need to go low and slow and kind of go my own pace so that when I do encounter some more of those spots where I need to use some of the power that I have, it's there. And really, I guess I kind of learned that I just, let those coyotes rock and roll up in front of me and we'll just meet at the top of the hill and everybody wins.
Yeah. And I know you're not, you prefaced that with not beating yourself up and, you're just riding like a Wolverine. So, you cruise along, conservatively, but when things get really roller coaster, you can punch it and actually your abilities in that area excel beyond the coyotes. So very good to have that as an example. And we also talk about in the book quite a bit, hey, doesn't matter what kind of body you've got, if you want to, you can train for anything, and you can do that regardless of where you live. So I know you've got maybe around 3 months, you've got a surf trip coming up. And so tell me about the Surferine Project.
Well, first of all, I like to surf. In fact, I love the ocean, but I am not great at it, and I've had a little bit of success here and there. So this is a program that, you and I worked on together to, Surferine, that's a Wolverine on a surfboard. And so I think if you take into account my animal and then also sort of my level of skill and fitness in surfing, this is something where, essentially it's designed to, my overall conditioning is okay, which is something we've talked about, but the actual demands of surfing, which is that dynamic, paddling, and then that movement of popping up on the board, it's something where I want to improve my skills and also, my muscle memory on that. And so really this doesn't fit completely in my wheelhouse, but the program that we've kind of came up with involves some overall conditioning and movement, which I get, and then a couple of gym sessions, which kind of go through a flow, and it's an overall body conditioning, but it's kind of progressive where there's a warm up and stretching, and then there's some simulation of the actual the actual pop up. Then there's some actual popping up, which is the dynamic movement, and then it shifts into some sort of weight training that I do with dumbbells on stability discs, and then on actually I've got a balanced surfboard, and then So it's both like training for the agility and the dynamic movement, building strength. And then there's also a component where you get in the pool and using the high intensity interval training, doing that in the context of the pool on a surfboard to build that kind of that power, and also train my body to be more in that position where, you know, you're prone, you've got your neck up, which is kind of unusual in terms of if you don't do it, it can quickly burn you out. So I'm headed down to the, stay tuned for how it turns out, but that's in March, but that's the Surfarine program that you primarily came up, John, with a little bit of, you know, insight myself.
Well, yeah, and that's how any program should be developed. I mean, we design it based on, you know, working together, you know, and what are your needs and goals and experiences and likes and dislikes. And then what I try to do is say, well, what's the, you know, what are the energy system requirements? What are the sport specific demands? And then we, and it's fun, you know, so you've got a surfboard in your garage and you're actually doing some very, appropriate training. And so you're going to go down there and you're going to be a ferocious aqua beast. and what that really gives you the ability to do is have fun. You know, you're going to be able to go, you've invested in this trip, so you can go out there and, you know, be strong and surf all day and maybe surf well. You know, obviously there's going to be some on water time, but your body's going to let you do it. You're not going to get fatigued and have to go lay on the beach and you know, and sniff and cry. And that's why you're ferocious.
Yeah, I think that that's the plan. And so stay tuned. I think that I've done three of these workouts so far in the past week. And it really has been interesting to specifically have a very tangible goal that you can connect with your workout activity. It's, you know, it's motivational, but it's also very practical. And so that's another consideration I like. So
awesome. And PK, you're awesome. Thank you for sharing. So that kind of moves us into the next topic of the day. And Melissa M. wanted to know, how do body dimensions factor into animal fit? I'm pretty sure I'm a bobcat, but I have a long torso and short legs. And this seems to make it harder for me to run than my long-legged husband, who is also a bobcat.
Great question. I think that clearly they've gone through the determination, and I'm curious to hear the answer to this one, Jay-Z.
Yeah, me too. And I think, I'm eager to share, but the idea there is that we still have room for variance in all of our beasts, and no one species, or in other words, no one wolverine or one otter is absolutely identical to the next. You're going to be similar, yes, but we have some room for those things. And I want to try to bring out some of those points. So first of all, running is only one functional capacity. You know, let's not forget that. And so, you know, sure, if a person is healthy and is able to use running as one of their conditioning or sports or fun tools, great, but it's only one thing. And so I would say to Melissa M, maybe, you know, your husband's set of characteristics make running a little bit more of an easy fit for him than it is for you, and that's okay.
Absolutely.
Then you kind of go along and you say, well, as a bobcat, saying this to Melissa and to her husband, you know, you're still probably quick and somewhat explosive and agile. Those are just features or traits that bobcats have. But here's an interesting thing. Your longer torso and probably longer arms will help you in swimming and racket sports, to name a few. So you actually have better gifts or benefits from those, what we call anthropomorphic characteristics.
Yes, indeed.
So then as we cruise along, we say, well, within an animal or a body type, you know, there's room for some of these differences. And probably the best example I can give is not too many years ago, an excellent book was written by David Epstein entitled The Sports Gene. And it was really a great book that looked at this phenomenon specifically. We'd all agree that most elite athletes in a sport or a position have very similar bodies. But the best ones, the highest performers, usually have a few other traits proven by research, identified, specified. And for example, the best high jumpers in the world, you know, they all have very similar looking bodies, but the ones that are the best among the best have actually been measured to have the longest Achilles tendons, because the Achilles tendon is the energy storage and transfer device for high jumping. The best basketball forwards have the greatest wingspan, you know, arms out to the side, measure from fingertip to fingertip, they are actually not only or most forwards more gifted in wingspan than the rest of the population. The best forwards have a couple inches on the rest. And the best baseball hitters, the most prolific hitters in baseball, also have the highest visual acuity. This has all been measured and documented so that they can actually see the laces on the ball as it's coming off the pitcher's fingers. Because, you know, at practically 100 miles per hour, that's what they have to do to be able to commit to their swing and connect the ball at that time. So really interesting things where, you know, we have these bodies with these unique characteristics, but within that there are other traits and they're all gifts. You just have to find, you know, exactly where they fit and pull them out and embrace them.
And I think that's fascinating. And I love the example of the best of the best, that I was just, you know, imagining these high jumpers and that, you know, maybe it's even just a couple millimeters longer with the Achilles tendons that separates, you know, the gold medalist from that super elite athlete that is just not on the podium. Interesting.
Oh, sure. And let's just finish up for Melissa M saying, hey, you're awesome. And so, you know, maybe you want to challenge your husband to a triathlon. In all reality, your swimming can offset his running and you know, there's marital harmony. There's also some very interesting considerations in how animals apply force. And so this is just one of those interesting things where, you know, I observe and, you know, I stumble along and I look at these animals and these people doing things. And so a coyote in applying force, a coyote is designed to apply a light force very repetitively. And in music, that's like, it's actually called pianissimo. And so it's like, and that's, you know, that's your coyote example of energy or force production. Whereas a bear, it's much more vibrato and it's a very big sonic boom, like a bass drum boom. And then there's an interval of pause before the bear does that again. So that's really, interesting to look at how these bodies come together to apply force. And certainly talking about, you know, Melissa M or PK, there's some great examples there. One more, just, you know, I love talking about this because again, I'm a student. Let's say we've got that bear, and we've got a bobcat. So if you tell the bear, okay, I want you to pull right. Or maybe the bear happens to be an offensive tackle and you're in the huddle and this is, rep 54 on three. Whatever you're going to say, the bear is going to start right and keep going right and build momentum like a diesel locomotive until ultimately that irresistible force is rolling. Now, if you say to the bobcat, go right, they'll immediately go left first because that's how a bobcat functions. It uses counter movements and elastic recoil to load the system and then spring or bounce back. And so that's good to know about yourself, whether you're playing basketball or football or anything else. And maybe the final example I can give for that, I lied. I said I wasn't going to give anymore. It's the pickle jar. And I observed this as a kid. So I had a friend who was a bear. I didn't know he was a bear at the time, but I know he's a bear now. And I happened to be in the kitchen. And my mother said, there's this big jar of pickles. And she said, I can't get this jar open. Can one of you strong boys help me? And so I said, yeah, I'll give it a try. And so I gave it a try. And being being a bit of a wolf, I didn't quite have the elasticity that a bobcat would have. And so I tried to impulse that pickle jar and kind of, give it a quick pop to get it off. Didn't work. But my friend, the bear, took the jar and he just began to build force. And you could feel it like a volcano or a geyser getting ready to erupt until, you know, his irresistible force overcame the immovable object of the pickle jar. Of course, now the problem was he was holding the jar sideways and he poured the pickle juice all over his waist. But hey, he got the job done.
You know what? I love that example. That is so appropriate. Those examples. I love the one of the bobcat where that kind of quick motion and it's, so you're saying they'd start to the left, load on the left leg and then spring to the right. Cause that's kind of how they move quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And that's physics and biomechanics, sure. You know, Newton's laws meet physiology and, you know, you can see it everywhere in yourself and others, walking down the street, watching sports on TV, it doesn't matter. Melissa M, you're awesome. Thank you so much. And now we have another thing that came in, and this is from Steve 24/7, 365. Like I say, I got to catch up to you guys. You're so amazing. Thank you. So Steve says this, can you give some examples of famous athletes and celebrities and what their animals are? Sure, I can.
Absolutely. Yes.
And you know, we could do this for hours, but we won't. So thanks, listeners, for being with us. Merry Christmas again. Cameron Diaz, wolf.
Yes. Are we gonna talk about these, or are we just gonna kind of like, blast through them, or
I just
talk about a couple here and there? Yeah.
Yeah, I just paused. Like, I didn't expect anything. Just wanted to say, so Cameron Diaz, kind of a wolf. You know, you can notice, you know, she's got some very angular skeletal features. You know, moving on, Jennifer Aniston, bobcat. Rawr.
Gotcha. Yes, absolutely. That's the left of the right, springy.
Yeah, say it again. Rawr. Okay, moving on. Simone Biles, named by ESPN as 2018's most dominant athlete. Simone Biles is a gymnast, for any listener who may not be aware. Really an otter.
Now, John, I want to stop here and talk about. So an otter, that is break it down. That's a...
Yeah, so that otter has an endomorphic or bear base.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then some amount of ectomorphic contribution or coyote contribution. So what happens with that is, you know, the otter ends up getting the joint mobility gifts and the just a range of motion capacity that the bear has, without, let's say, the largest of skeleton or the most muscle, although they do have powerful muscles, otters do. And then some of the coyote traits that usually will come into that are a bit more compactness of frame. And so that, you know, the combination of bear plus coyote, you know, gives otter, and it's really the, in the animal fit kingdom, it's the most agile of beasts. And you can see it in Simone Biles quite readily.
Interesting. And I would have just kind of thought that most gymnasts would have had some panther in there, but in terms of the flexibility and sort of the stamina required, there's enough explosiveness in the otter combination to obviously be this, you know, just this amazing dynamic athlete then.
Yeah. In fact, you know, when you look at the bear as the base, you know, the bear's got quite a bit of that, powerful glycolytic muscle fiber, you know, ripping stumps apart and that sort of thing. And so, you know, you trickle that down into any beast and there's that power contribution. And conversely, panthers don't have a lot of slow twitch fiber. You know, you just don't look at, you know, any of the big cats having too much of that. But they have varying ratios of glycolytic to oxidative glycolytic fast twitch fibers. And those can be very, very valuable and specialized for speed applications. But, sometimes not quite yielding the same strength to weight ratios that you'd see in an otter, for example.
Very nice. So who do we have next?
We've got Gabby Reese, who represents the raccoon.
Yes, and she's a volleyball player, correct?
Yeah, she's a volleyball player, you know, and a tall lady, excuse me, but with a very fairly, you know, lean, lightweight skeleton, and then the ability to do things very precisely, meticulously, powerfully. That's, you know, one of the traits of volleyball. There's the jumping and the hitting. And so she represents that, you know, and again, you know, animals come in tall and short variations. So Gabby Reese, a tall raccoon. We've got Serena Williams. Yes. Now you get your panther.
Yes.
I think you were craving a panther. So there's a panther, Serena Williams, a panther. And then, look at Shalane Flanagan. She's, probably the one of, if not the best U.S. marathoners ever in history, Shalane Flanagan. Coyote, and that would make perfect sense. You rarely find an elite marathoner who's not a coyote.
Gotcha. Where are we going next?
Well, everyone wants to hear it. Hugh Jackman, Wolverine.
Now, is he actually a Wolverine, or is it just convenient?
He's actually a Wolverine, and here's the interesting thing. You look at his body, especially when you look at the like other roles he's been in besides the Wolverine, and you know when he's like, you know, they take a picture of him at the beach somewhere, and you happen to be in the grocery store aisle, and it's on a, you know, that's what I'm talking about. So Hugh Jackman's, you know, he's fairly you know, medium, large framed, but he also has this ability to put on a lot of muscle. Of course, he gets shredded for the roles. That's how they do it. But can you imagine that, you know, they were casting, the producers were casting Wolverine, and they had all these people come in, and then they didn't know Animal Fit at the time, but they saw Hugh Jackman and was like, hey, this guy, there's something about this guy. He matches up this role, Wolverine.
Indeed. Indeed, Jay-Z.
Yeah, it's like magic. So then LeBron James, Panther, you know, when you look at, you know, his speed as well as just all around athleticism, great example there. Also has that wingspan we talked about earlier. Tyron Smith is an offensive tackle for the Dallas Cowboys. Bear.
Yes. Now,
oh, go ahead.
Keep going. No. Keep going. So
the male version of the Coyote, got to have one in there. Kevin Bacon, the man of the 80s.
Absolutely. And then who do we have next?
Okay, then let's take a look at, you know, a couple people that everybody probably knows about. One is David Goggins. So David Goggins is an ex-Navy SEAL. He's a fitness personality. He's currently on the cover of Outside Magazine this month's issue. You know, nice representative of a Bobcat.
Interesting. Yeah, he's got an interesting story. If anyone's interested on kind of learning more about him, you would. He's an interesting cat, but he's done a lot of like endurance type activities. You know, we're talking ultra marathons, etc., like perseverance type. So I think that he's an interesting study when you say, okay, he does have kind of that, you know, that base of a coyote, but I think he's also gone into great detail about what kind of physical maladies have happened because of those type of activities that he's done.
Yeah, and interesting thing, you know, maybe just to double check on that, you know, as a bobcat, he's got the base panther and then secondary coyote. So he's a slimmed down panther, if you look at it that way. So it turns out that, you know, the majority of your Navy SEALs, special operators, these days we call them tactical athletes. You know, bobcats are very popular in that group because they're all around agile, durable, critters, if you will, and so not that you know, his performances in ultra marathons, for example, he's not an elite performer. He's not winning things, and I don't mean this in a derogatory fashion. He's finishing things, and so that's, you know, he's got a lot of perseverance characteristics, personality qualities we want to admire, but just an all around durable athletic beast, David Goggins.
Absolutely, and let's take it home. I think you have a badger for us.
Yeah, and a badger is, you know, kind of like the reigning king of CrossFit, a guy who's, he's a bad A for sure, Matt Frazier.
Okay, and a badger, again, that's a bear panther, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So the bear comes first, panther comes second. And you can see this in the guy, you know, he's a big bone dude. He's got some rounded facial and joint features, great mobility, which really helps in CrossFit with all the, you know, the Olympic lifts in particular, and then just muscular power, you know, and he dominates, he works hard at conditioning. And so obviously some of the CrossFit events, you know, they're going to be more weighted in strength and power. And you know, he really, you know, excels there. And then, you know, doesn't fall too far back in more of the things that utilize endurance and speed. So an interesting thing how one puts together their training to use their body, you know, to win. And that's what this guy is a great example of doing. So now we move along. So now we've got this picture. Here's PK. Here's a couple of other people. And again, they're all so magnificent and amazing. Well, you remember Montana Fit Chick. Another one of these great names. So Montana Fit Chick gave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts recently. Thank you. And she wanted us to compare CrossFit and marathon training. So here goes. First of all, we're not here to diss any sport or exercise. You know, we're in the business of keeping people active. So let's be objective. Let me get that out right away. There are always pros and cons to every sport, just like there are strengths and weaknesses in every animal. So what I'm going to do is I'll just go through and I'll list a few of the pros and a few of the cons for each of these activities. And, you know, maybe that'll open up our minds, some thinking. Maybe PK will have a comment. I can ramble, but I'll try to keep it somewhat concise. So marathon training, let's talk about your marathon running, being a marathoner. What are the pros of that? Well, it builds endurance. This is, seems obvious, but that's true. And it builds endurance in every, you know, every animal, whether one is a coyote or not, that body always tries to adapt or respond to the stimulus we, you know, most frequently apply to it. So that message, hey, you know, let's train for a marathon tends to build that capacity. More so on some than others. It improves circulation. So that, you know, aerobic exercise, we know that it has multiple benefits, but one of them is that it stimulates capillary development or vascular neogenesis, if you like that term. So we get some great benefits there. It tends to benefit sleep. And I would say that, you know, we know the science is pretty strong that all exercise benefits sleep, but there may be a slightly stronger benefit towards sleep with aerobic exercise. You can argue that a little bit because a lot of the studies used aerobic exercise since because it's easy to control and measure. But nonetheless, we know that you know, if you're training for a marathon, it might help you fall asleep. It can be meditative. You're out there for time, distance, miles, whatever you want to call it. And it allows one, sometimes maybe forces one or works better if one is in a meditative state. And it also allows a person, an athlete, to test persistence and perseverance. And it's good to test oneself once in a while. So those are pros of marathons. Now, let's look at the other side, just to be objective, as I mentioned. So marathon training takes a lot of time. You know, you really can't train for a marathon doing only brief, intense exercise because the nature of the beast, shall we say, hey, shout out to April Wine, yeah, it takes a lot of time to train for a marathon. No way to get around that. Now, if not progressed properly and with low enough intensity, marathon training can lead to chronic fatigue and inflammatory states. So in other words, you know, there's a way to train for a marathon, you know, effectively, safely, and even healthfully, probably. But if a person is building up their mileage too rapidly and training at just a little bit too quick of a pace, a lot of times what can happen is they're just not quite getting full recovery between training sessions, and slowly fatigue and inflammation, which is health, you know, counterproductive to health, will build up. And so there's that. And then there's also the truism that, well, it is straight line down the road. It's repetitive and has overuse injury risks. So those are a few cons. And there's one more that I'll mention that, like, I think the listeners are going to be very interested in knowing about is marathon training can cause muscle loss and fat gain.
Interesting. How does that happen?
Yeah. So again, it gets into, you know, this genetic signaling mechanisms. So if you're running down the road all the time, you're sending a message to your body, two messages. One, I've got to get lighter. I don't need to carry this weight down the road because I need this whole, you know, economy. And so what happens is we will pare down our fast twitch muscle fibers. You don't really need them. You don't need a lot of speed and power, to run at marathon capacity for several hours. And so we bias and use those slow twitch fibers. So the body actually gets smart and it gets rid of the muscle mass it's not using. So that, to me, that's a little bit of a concern because as we get older, we need our muscle, and particularly we need those fast twitch fibers because they're the ones that help us with, balance and fall prevention and all sorts of things. So that's a con in my view. Also, there's the fat gain, which most people would say, oh no, you know, you're going to burn it off. You're going to burn off calories and you're running for marathon, training for a marathon. But that same message is, hey, every day you're depleting me, or almost every day, and I need some fuel. And I can only store, in terms of carbohydrate storage, you know, muscle glycogen, liver glycogen, you know, I can only store a small amount, you know, for a little bit. And the body doesn't like that. The body likes to always be prepared for emergencies. So it says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to build the muffin top. And I'll just have a little bit extra body fat on board, which, you know, I can convert into fuel when I probably am going to need it, because you keep scaring me with these things. So those are real issues. And sure, you can train for a marathon and be really lean. You know, obviously there's an offset between, you know, nutrition and training, But for a lot of people, that's ultimately what happens, is they end up losing some muscle and gaining a few percentage points of body fat.
Sure, sure. Okay, so let's talk about CrossFit. Let's move through the pros and the cons before we get into talking about how different animals would potentially train for these.
Yeah, and I have no idea, but my guess is Montana Fit Chick might be a CrossFitter because, you know, she would have called herself Montana Marathon Mama or something. You know, I don't know, but this is my guess. So here's some great pros of CrossFit, and there's things that I really love about CrossFit is that it trains the body in all around capacities and functions. And so, you know, there's really not a lot of things that are left uncovered or unapproached when one, you know, regularly does CrossFit and goes through quite a few of the watts. That's great. We want that, you know, multifaceted functional capacity. Generally, CrossFit's hard. There's a lot of challenge and a lot of sense of accomplishment when, you can learn a new movement skill or complete a workout in a goal time. So that's really a great thing about CrossFit. It builds team and tribe and connection, and we need those things. So I love that. Honors fallen heroes. Many of the workouts are named after people who gave their life for this country. And also, most CrossFit workouts are somewhat brief. You know, that, again, sometimes depends on, in my case, how long it takes you to complete them, and also the design of the specific workout. But they're typically not, 3-hour endeavors. There's some great things about CrossFit. Now I've got a few things that I'm not the only person who's identified as cons. And so one is that the training model, it may be too frequent and intense for most people. I mean, unless one is really Matt Frazier, it starts to get tough because the workouts are relatively high intensity, heavy strength, heavy, anaerobic demand workouts, often done, every day or numbers of days per week. And so for most of us, if we work out that hard, we definitely need more recovery days in there to get, certainly maintain health, but to get the best fitness benefits as well. And I have worked with a lot of people who, they got spun out of a CrossFit box, because they just broke down. So there's a way to prevent that and just basically use a little more, a little less frequency or a little more moderation. That type of training, though, also what it does is it's a high cortisol producer. So it's kind of like when you have to get revved up and jacked up, there's some stress hormones that are involved. And again, we're designed to do that. We're just not, our bodies just prefer not to do it chronically. So we want to have that be episodic. There's a high neural activation. So that gets into some of the things we talked about with neurotypes. You've got to, if you're going to do a max lift or you're going to do anything that's fairly compressed and explosive, you've got to get psyched up, and you're really relying on the central nervous system to activate the body. And that's, again, a great thing, but we all vary in our ability to recover from efforts like that. There's a high lactate level in most CrossFit workouts, coupled with low recovery. In other words, the burn is there. And again, we would question, is there too much of it? It uses powerlifting, which powerlifting is our squat, bench, and deadlift, and Olympic lifting, that's the snatch and clean and jerk, in endurance fashion, and more so for the Olympic lifts than the power lifts. But those lifts really were never really designed as endurance activities. And so one of the dangers is if it's heavy or even moderately heavy at high reps, form can falter and injury risk can go up. And then we have a really high skill requirement, and that's partly because the founder of CrossFit, Greg Glassman, the guy's about the same age as me, he's an ex-gymnast. And so he wanted to bring that gymnastic component into training. And it's awesome in some ways, but in other ways, when we look at motor learning, in adult exercisers, sometimes it's really difficult to acquire high level gymnastic skills later in life. And also that means that people who are struggling chronically to do a movement, yet they haven't mastered the technique, they're at much greater risk for injury. So, lastly, there's just some questionable methods there. And I've certainly, it's been very successful and great for many people. But when you look at Glassman's training, for example, you know, he's got some handstand walks in there. Well, you know, the human shoulder is not designed to be a weight bearing joint. You know, sure, we can do that temporarily, you know, with good muscle stability, but handstand walks are really probably contraindicated for most people in their fitness. Not only is it difficult for most people to do, but it's just not good for long-term joint health in the shoulder. So just a few examples there. And I think that, that helps to get people thinking. And my take-home message, and this is for Montana Fit Chick, is, hey, you can do whatever you want, but you can also modify how you do these things, and you can use that animal fit knowledge to help you. So if you know your body, you know, has these traits, you know, I can get away with or do a little more of extract benefit from this type of training. But on the other hand, I can do a little less or avoid or change something so that it doesn't hurt me.
Absolutely. Well, let's get practical on that. Let's say we're looking at a marathon, and let's use two examples. Let's say, how would a coyote train for a marathon versus how a bear would tailor it for the bear qualities?
You betcha. So a coyote is going to probably, and again, we're assuming a lot of things here that, you know, maybe they have some amount of running into their system and they're otherwise healthy. A coyote is going to be able to pile on the volume and build endurance at low intensity without breakdown. You know, that economical body is just going to be able to do that. And so they're going to find a nice fit or a match to the marathon. And since the nature of the marathon and its energy system demands fit that coyote's natural gifts, again, that's, we talked about Shalane Flanagan as one example. That's why most successful marathoners are quite coyote-like. So it doesn't mean that anybody can complete this marathon, but it is easier for coyotes, and the top performers will generally be coyotes. Then you look at the bear, and the bear is going to need to use probably more frequency in training, but smaller doses, more variety, more cross training to build conditioning without overexposure to injury risk. So you just can't tell a bear, hey, every other day, you know, go out and run a, you know, moderately long run and then do, you know, here's a tempo workout here, do a exceptionally long run on the weekends. You know, that's going to be a 3-week path to breakdown for the bear.
Right.
The smarter trainer is going to say, hey, you know, we know, you know, you can absorb so much of this type of training, but your joint mobility and your body weight are a little higher, and those ground reaction forces are going to potentially be destructive if we don't backfill with some work in the pool, work on the bike, you know, even get back in the weight room and do that endurance capacity. So that's just a great example of a critter, you know, a bear doing a marathon. They're using that animal fit knowledge to succeed at a goal, even if it's outside of their natural wheelhouse.
Yeah, not only succeed, but you know, the training itself the training is also in the wheelhouse. So not only on the day of the day of the event, but in the run up to that, it will be, you know, more likely to stay on task with this modified training program. So does that you know, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, you just summed it up. You know, you're embracing your inner animal. You're unleashing that beast and unlocking its potential. I love it. So let's take a look at how you and I, you know, a wolf and a wolverine, respectively, or I and me and you, however you want to say that, might approach a couple of popular CrossFit watts. So, you know, here's where, you know, we're going to take a look at how do you do a workout. So the first thing I'd like to look at is the Linda workout. So the Linda workout in CrossFit, it's three exercises. The three are the deadlift, the bench press, and the power clean. The deadlift is to be performed with 1.5 times body weight, the bench press at 1 times body weight, and the power clean at 0.75 times body weight. Well, those exercises are performed continuously in a descending set circuit of 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So in other words, weights never change. You go up to the bar, however long it takes you, you get 10 deadlifts in, then you go over to the bench, bang out 10 bench presses, then you do your 10 cleans, your next round is 9, and so forth till you're done. This is often referred to in the CrossFit world as the three bars of death.
Right, exactly. So if you say, all right, so for a Wolverine like myself, what would, you know, how would that shake out for a Wolverine?
Yeah, I can see you kind of, you know, walking up to it and, you know, your beard is bristling and you're sticking your barrel chest out and, you know, and you're a ferocious Wolverine and you're going to eat this thing up. I mean, you really are. You know, it's big, full body compound power moves with substantial resistance. So that's a nice fit for you to be able to do. Now, Jay-Z the Wolf, oh, struggles mightily here. You know, I'm pretty sure I could bang out the bench press reasonably because I've got decent strength there. But those other lifts, oh, man, I'm looking at doing doubles and triples at best to get them done, especially that deadlift because, you know, my generally I've had some back injuries. I'm a little bit cautious, but my max deadlift, I think last year I did 1.75 body weight, and I probably could have, you know, doubled it. But at 1.5, I'm just dying. I mean, I can do it safely by taking my time, but what a huge challenge. It'll take me twice as long as you to do this, maybe three times. You'll be, you know, in the showers and gone, and I'm still in there. And I would set my station up in the corner of the gym where people wouldn't see me, wouldn't laugh at me too much. But that's what would happen if we did the Linda. So, you know, Wolf's got to be a little careful, especially when he goes into the element of the Wolverine.
Exactly. Well, let's flip that coin over and let's take a look at another type of workout and then how these two animals would fare.
Oh yeah. And I'm starting to feel confident already just thinking about it, you know? So, you know, let's take a look at the Murph, and it's probably my favorite CrossFit workout. And imagine why, you know, the Murph kind of fits me, but it's named for fallen hero, Lieutenant Michael Murphy, who was killed in the line of duty in Afghanistan in 2005. And one of his favorite workouts was to do a 1 mile run for time. And then you bang out 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, and 300 squats any way you can get it done and finish up by running another mile.
Right. So, even just hearing you describe that, I'm exhausted.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, my tongue's hanging out. It's like, yeah, okay, what's next? So, first of all, the Murph it's a natural fit for hybrid animals, you know, that like bobcats, wolves, otters, and raccoons. You know, they've got that, you know, kind of those mix of traits. Well, coyotes will find the running easy, but they'll struggle with the strength. That's quite a bit of work, especially, you know, in the pull-up capacity. Panthers poop out. You know, they're so powerful and so fast. You know, continuous movement running and body weight exercise, that's not the best fit for a panther. And then take a look at a bear. You know, 100 pull-ups, that just doesn't sound bear country to me. And that's what I've seen in working with lots of people. So it depends for the badger and the Wolverine. You know, power is good in these beasts, as we know in your case, but conditioning level has to be really high. In other words, you got to have a high VO2 max to be able to get in there and get through this thing. And maybe it's more of a survive type of a scenario. Then you look at the otter, you know, and the otter can run and they'll be tough because those body weight exercises are really easy for otters. It's very gymnastic, you know, to go from one thing to the next. And a raccoon can execute in that capacity oftentimes very well too, but may not be as fast or durable in the running. But really what happens with the Murph is that the bobcats and the wolves will fight this one out. And I'm pretty sure Murph was a bobcat looking at all the photographs we have of him. So this is the kind of workout where I'll definitely trash talk. And, you know, as we're getting ready, I'll probably say, hey, it sucks to be you today, buddy. And especially in that last mile, as you're looking over your shoulder, the wolf is closing down.
You know, and I would just celebrate you in that. When I think about, I don't know if I've ever done specifically the Murph, but excuse me. You know, the 1 mile run for time, you're competing against yourself. So you're going, you know, your fastest version of yourself. That's just, you know, I would come in from that with the tank on E. I'd just kind of spark myself out. So I think that's fascinating. I do think that if you're listening, these type of questions around sort of where do I fit in or how would it apply to different animals, we're gonna definitely be cataloging those. And if we get some more great questions, we might work another mailbag in early in the new year in January. So get on there, rate and review, and send us your questions or send them over to John because we might incorporate them. Before we wrap up today, don't you have another review speaking of, John?
Absolutely. And so what a fun show, and thanks, guys. But now for even more fun, the review of the week. And this one is from Xena597. Xena says, "This is my go-to health and fitness podcast. 5 stars. I'm a wife, mother of 3, account executive, and get her done kind of gal. I love the Lifetime Body podcast because you guys always keep things in perspective. You talk about the importance of nutrition, sleep, and a balanced lifestyle, but you don't shy away from encouraging people to occasionally be intense or aggressive in training, as long as they are smart about it. I try to be an example to my friends and family in that way, because too many people think health and longevity is all about living in a bubble, measuring everything, and never going hard. I say hogwash. Thanks for keeping me well-advised and motivated. This warrior princess is making her body last a lifetime, thanks to the pearls of wellness wisdom she gets from Jay-Z and PK.
Wow. High praise. That's a heck of a review, and humbling as always. It's really good to hear, you know, people talk in their own words. It's great.
Yeah, I love it. And I love it that, you know, they, you know, hey, listeners, you're so great. And really, we appreciate you so much. But that you're picking up on our vibe and the terms that we use. And it just it just means so much. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart, and want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. And hey, it's never too late to grab your copy of Animal Fit today for yourself or someone else. But even if you don't do that, thanks for staying with us. And again, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you for listening to the Lifetime Body Podcast. If you'd like more information on the Lifetime Body publications and services that can help you to achieve ultimate wellness and look, feel, and perform your best, check out thelifetimebody.com. And if you're digging this content, please leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to the show and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, this is the Lifetime Body, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime.